holding Kuf Aleph on the Beis. We're beginning the 12th Perek, the next to last Perek of the Masechta. Still continuing on the topic of a woman collecting her ksuba. We're going to start by talking about a case where the first case that we're going to talk about in our Mishnah is about where you have something, not ksuba itself, but a tnai that came together with the ksuba. Now, you have the regular tnoi ksuba that we learned about earlier in the Masechta, and then you have this one as a special one-off tnai that a couple made when they get married. We're going to talk about in the Gemara the concept of tnoim as we're familiar with them nowadays. So the Mishnah says, "Hanoisei seisha, a man marries a woman, uposkeimai, she arranges with him, she's marrying him on condition, kadeshi yozunus bita chomesh shanim, that he's going to support her daughter from a previous marriage for 5 years. Chayiv lezuna, chomesh shanim, so he's chayiv to support her for 5 years," which the Gemara is going to point out, the chiddush of that is, even though we may be talking about that we don't necessarily have a shtar to that effect, or we're going to discuss the Gemara, if we have a shtar, what kind of shtar it is, it may only be a verbal commitment, nevertheless, we still hold him to it. An interesting point that Mephoshim on the Mishnah talk about why after 5 years, I mean, you could say 5 years because Gemara often uses five as just an indefinite number, but there is an explanation along the lines of, given that in Yevamos and earlier in our Masechta, we've learned that a woman after she's divorced or widowed or what have you, she has to wait 24 months before she's able to remarry because she's usually nursing the baby during that time. You don't want the milk supply to be harmed. So then the idea is, another 5 years brings her to 7 years old, which the Tosfos Yom Tov says a woman is usually going to figure by seven. Okay, you know, she's not so worried about support for her daughter. The daughter can already start working herself, at least at in those times, a seven-year-old could already be earning money for themselves. Further explanation on it is that the chiddush is even after six, the Gemara is going to talk about, the point is that a girl usually stays with her mother, continues living with her mother, even if the couple is divorced, the father, usually the mother has custody, and the point is even after six. So even though, again, she's remarrying when her daughter is two, and she's saying for 5 years, implying that it's going to be at least until her daughter is seven, still the point is her daughter is going to be with her, as opposed to her ex-husband saying that he wants custody of the daughter. Anyway, Nisus Lacha, continues the Mishnah, suppose now the same woman married somebody else. So originally she was married to Reuben and she had a daughter with him. Now she's divorced or widowed from Reuben. Now she's marrying Shimon and she made that deal with Shimon that he's going to support her daughter for 5 years. So far we only have number two. Now Shimon divorces her. Now she's marrying Levi. She still has the daughter from Reuben. And she's saying with Levi, she makes the same deal. She arranges with Levi as well, with her third husband, that he's going to support her daughter for 5 years. So also Chayiv Lezuna, Chomesh Shanim, he's also Chayiv to support her for 5 years. He can't say, in other words, well, it's still during the 5 years that Shimon was Chayiv for, therefore I should be Potter. No, we don't say that, because that was the deal. And furthermore, the Mishnah continues, Lo Yomer HaRishon L'Chetave Etli Azuna. The first one, Shimon cannot say, when she comes to me, I'll support her. In other words, Rashi says, Shimon might argue, if I was still married to this woman, to the mother of this daughter, sure, I'd support her. But now that I'm not married to her anymore, then why should I bother? Nevertheless, he doesn't have that claim.
That's why Tzur was ready. This would hold now.
Yeah, we're talking about now she's on her third husband. Yeah. She was married to Ruve, and she had a daughter. Yeah, now Reuven died or divorced her. She's marrying Shimon and makes a deal for 5 years. So now it's later on, during the 5 years, Shimon divorces her, and now she marries Levi. So now if she makes the same deal with Levi, then Shimon can't say, you know what, I only agreed to 5 years when we were going to be married. I never expected the 5 years to outlast our marriage. Doesn't matter. He still has to continue supporting her for the full five, even though he's not married anymore. Right.
That is, unless they stipulate otherwise.
Going to say what happens. What?
That is, unless they stipulate.
That it's only going to be during the marriage. The Mishnah is going to describe that in a couple of lines. Yeah. So the point is, Rashi says the second husband, Shimon, can't say, I only agreed to support her while she's living with us. In other words, while the marriage is still intact. But no, he agreed to 5 years, and he asked her. Then we hold him to 5 years.
Sometimes it goes with the wife. It's a one package deal, but the right. Wife's out.
Right. So you would think that, yeah. Also, other Mephoshim point out, the point is also, he might say, look, Shetabe Etzli, fine, when she's living with me, if I have custody of her, or when she comes to visit me, then I'll support her, but otherwise I'm Potter. No, he's Chayiv regardless. So in fact, in fact, he has to bring her food to where her mother is, because as the Gemara is going to describe, the child usually goes with the mother. Usually the mother has custody. Next, continues the Mishnah. Now, the two of them can't say, we'll support her jointly. In other words, we'll pool our money together and half of and half of her mizonis will come from Shimon and half from Levi. No, one of them gives her food. The other one of them gives her actual food. The other one gives her the money that would have gone towards the food. And that way, like she has the money, and eventually she can use it for something. She can use it herself when she gets older, when she gets married, or whatever. Since he agreed, since it was in the Tznayim, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, that he's chayev to support for 5 years, then therefore we have to hold him to that.
Why would the third one be maskim do something if she?
Why is maskim is a question, but this woman said, I'm not going to marry you unless you agree. So, okay. Nisus, what happens if this girl gets married, this one, and still within the 5 years, habal noisim amazonas, so now her husband starts supporting her, as usual, if the husband has a chiyuv to support his wife, as we learned earlier in the sector, v'hein noisim dmei mazonas, now both of the husbands, Shimon and Levi, give her dmei mazonas. So yeah, she's making out nicely over here, which it actually, Tosfos says, the chiddush is, that you would think once she's married, then maybe the agreement was only as long as she's not married. Once she's receiving mazonis from her husband, maybe they're not chayev. But and the same thing in the earlier part of the mission, you would think that Levi is not chayev because she already has mazonis from Shimon. No, neither of the in all these cases they're still chayev.
Especially if they come together in between.
Right. Mesu. Now, what happens if these husbands Shimon and Levi die? So their own daughters, whether from this woman or whether from some other woman, are supported from the chasim b'nei chorin, as usual, because we've learned earlier in the Masechta that supporting the daughters until they become begeres, or until they get married, is part of the tnoi ksuba. So therefore, when Shimon married this woman, besides that there was a one-off condition that he's going to support her daughter from previous marriage for 5 years, besides that, any daughters that he has with her, or any daughters that he himself had from a previous marriage, then he has the usual tnoi ksuba, is he's required to support them, but they are supported from the chasim b'nei chorin. Because as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, mazon ha'ishavah bonis, food for the wife or for the daughters, doesn't come from the chasim b'shabadim because of tikkun ha'olam, because we said, because otherwise nobody would ever want to buy property, because it's an open-ended thing. You don't know how much mazonis there could be over the years. So they get from the chasim nechorin, behini zonis from the chasim shabadim. Meanwhile, this girl, where the five-year deal was made, she gets to collect even from the chasim shabadim for her support, because she's like any other baal choy. The same way as if Shimon had borrowed money from somebody, then that person would be entitled to collect from the chasim nechorin. Here, in effect, Shimon is like a loive to this girl. It's as if he, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, it's as if he said that he owes her money. On the other hand, the Mishnah says, "Pikchim, the smart people, in order to avoid this whole problem that we have in this Mishnah, when they would write out such a shtar, they would write, or the Gemara is going to say, even they would write it, they would say it verbally, but whatever, they would say, they would specify the 5 years is only as long as you are with me, implying that if he dies or if he divorces her, then the agreement expires, then the agreement is cut off. The Tiferes Yisrael, by the way, has an interesting point. He says the reason why the Mishnah calls him Pikchim is because they worded it very carefully. They didn't want to use the expression if I die or I divorce you, because a person shouldn't al yiftachadim pelasadim. So instead, they would use the positive kolz man sha'at imi, as long as you are with me, implying, in other words, as opposed to the opposite, but without spelling it out explicitly. Okay, so the Gemara starts off with a related discussion, which is going to relate back to this. Itmar, we have a discussion of Amiroyim. If one person says, if Reuven says to Shimon, I owe you a money. Now, did he owe it? Now, there's a machloikas Rashi and Tosfos that affects this entire sugya. Are we talking about that Reuven is admitting that he owes a money? So, in other words, there was an actual loan before, and he's saying and he's admitting in front of Adim, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, or there's a shtar or whatever, that he owes this. Then we hold him for that. In other words, if it hadn't been for that, he could have denied. He could have said, "I paid it already." He could have whatever. Or Tosfos discusses one possibility that we might, also the Rif talks about this, that we might not even be talking about he actually owes anything, but just the fact, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that he writes a shtau to this effect, means that he's chayev, means that he's putting on himself a shibud to give that other person a money, even though he doesn't in fact owe it to him objectively. He never borrowed money from him. He never bought anything from him on credit. Just the fact that he has, what I was going to say, he writes out a shtar means that he owes the money. So the Gemara says,
but if he writes, I understand shtar that I paid you already.
Yeah, if he writes, I paid you already. That's different. Yeah, but he was saying chayev ani l'chama. So Rabbi Yochanan, I'm a chayiv with a shlokish, I'm a potter. So Rabbi Yochanan says that he's going to be chayiv, pay that money. Rish shlokish says he's going to be potter. So the Gemara asks, hey, Shidomi, what's the scenario that we're even talking about? Ida amalu atim edai. If Reuven says this to Shimon in the presence of Levi and Yehuda, they obviously have to be edim, because otherwise how are we going to have any proof that he did? So are we talking about that he actually said to Levi and Yehuda, I want you to be the edim. I'm appointing you as edim that to listen to what I'm saying. Well, my time is Rish Lakish to kapater. Then how could Rish Lakish say he's potter? He explicitly said that he wants these people to be edim. Therefore, there's no possibility of him saying that Meshata ani b'cha, I'm just joking to you, or that I already paid it or whatever, because he clearly said atem edai. And if he didn't say explicitly, you are my edim, my time of the Rabbi Yechanan become a chayim. Then why is Rabbi Yechanan saying he's chayim? Shouldn't he be able to, even if there are edim present, as long as he didn't say atem edai, he always has the possibility of saying, I was joking, or he could say, for example, I didn't want las bia atmi, I wanted people to think that I owe money, I didn't want people to think that I'm rich. So what's the case of it here? The answer is, in fact, the case is talking about, we didn't say to them, the case is that he said, I'm chayiv to you a mona with a shtar. Now, Rashi again explains that what it means is that we're talking about, so it's a shtar written in his own handwriting. There's no signature on it, but it says, Reuven hands Shimon a piece of paper that says, I owe you $100. So even though there's no signature, so Rashi explains, because like this, if it actually had his signature, then there wouldn't even be a machloikus. Then we would say that yes, of course he's chayav. But here there's no signature, so now you have the machloikus: is such a thing valid or not? So the fact that it's his handwriting is a strong thing, but the fact is there's no signature. So Rashi explains earlier in the Masechta, it talks about the quotes from the last Mishnah in Bava Basra, which we're going to quote another part of that last Mishnah soon, that says, if Shimon brings out a piece of paper that's written in Reuven's handwriting that says that Reuven owes him money, then he can collect from the Chosim Necharin. But Rashi says that's talking about where he signed in it, where Reuven signed document. Here, we're not talking about he actually signed it, but he gave Shimon a piece of paper saying, I owe you $100.
Because at the time we learned where this word was from, he could say that I prepared, I was going
to. He could say I prepared, but here he gave it. But that would be why the machlokas is. So we're gonna see in a second what Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish hold about it. So here again, you have Tosfos further on Kuf Beis Amud Aleph has a long discussion about this and says a couple of other possibilities. One of them being that we can be talking about it is a shtar with a signature on it, and we're talking about, in other words, that it's a it's not a shtar. It's not like Rashi says a shtar that for an existing debt, let's say, but rather it's a new thing that he's giving him a shtar, and based on that only he's hired him money. Actually, we'll get to that soon in connection with the further part of the Gemara. So we'll get back to that.
When do you need kiyum hashtar?
Kiyum hashtar is when one person claims, the lawyer claims, let's say, that the signatures are forged. He claims there's those signatures on this shtar, but he claims they're forged. In this case, also fine. Maybe he could claim that that his handwriting was forged. So then you'd need kiyum. But yeah. So now, Rabbi Yochanan Amachayev. So now Rabbi Yochanan says that he would be chayiv to pay alima milsa the shtar commandalu the amalahu atim edim dummy, because the shtar is strong enough, since he gave it to him in front of edim, it's the equivalent of saying to the people who were there atim edim. Rish Lakish am a potter loy alima milsa the shtar. On the other hand, Rish Lakish says it's potter because the shtar is not strong enough to accomplish that. He would actually have to tell them atim edim.
No signature.
Because there's no signature, right?
He gave him the shard as Adim, or he didn't say anything to
him? That's the thing. He didn't say Atam Adai. If he said Atam Adai, then everybody would agree he's Chayav. But because he didn't say, but on the other hand, it is a shtar written in his own hand, then therefore Rabbi Yochanan said that's strong enough to make it be considered a Hajjah, and therefore that it would be Chayav, and Rish Lakish says no.
The question only is, like, why would the other guy have his shtar? How'd he get it?
Again, it could be, for example, they dropped it and the other guy found it. It could be whatever. So the Gemara says, Tana, let's look at our Mishnah and see which one of the opinions our Mishnah fits better. The Mishnah had said, a man marries a woman, they arrange that he's going to support her daughter for 5 years. He's chayev to support her for 5 years. Now, my love, kihai gavna. Shouldn't we assume that, because after all, if he just told it to her verbally, how does she have a proof later on that they ever said any such thing? It means that he gave her a piece of paper in front of Adim that said that I was Makabal such and such. Now, of course, it actually says if there was a signature on it, there'd be no Chiddush. The fact that the Mishnah is giving us a Chiddush that he has to support for 5 years, implying there's no signatures of Adim, there's no Kinyan, and nevertheless he's Chayav. Well, that would go according to Rabbi Yochanan. How would our Mishnah go according to Rish Lakish? The answer is loy. The Gemara answer is no. We're not talking about a shtar. We're not talking about it's a shtar that he wrote out stam to her. We're talking about the shtori psikta. We're talking about a shtar where of the arrangement between the chosin and kala. What we think of as the tnoi. You think of sometime before the wedding. I mean, our minhag nowadays threw it right before the wedding because otherwise to break a tnoi was a pretty serious thing. But anyway, the point is you have a shtar tnoiim where you have over there all of the arrangements that Reishis Kol, it says over there, the Chosin and Kala have agreed they'll marry each other. And number two, the Chosin has pledged such and such, and the Kala has pledged, the Kala or her father has pledged such and such, et cetera, about Kol Shtar V'Kayim, and we have a Shtar Tnoi. So that's what we're talking about over here. Shtar Psikta is the Gemara's term for a Shtar of Tnoi. So they made the arrangements between them when the Chiddur of Gidol, and therefore the reason why this works is based on what Rav Gidol says. The Amr of Gidol Amar Rav, if suppose that the Kala's father says to the Chosin, Kama atanois nubincha, how much are you giving for your son towards wedding expenses and towards expenses of setting up a household and so forth? And the son's father, the Chosin's father answers, kach v'kach, such and such. And then he asks for Kama atanois nubincha, how about how much are you giving for your daughter for a nabin and so on and so forth? And he answers, kach v'kach, so and so much. Omdu v'kitshu, then they went and were makadish. Hein hadvorim aniknin ba'amira, such things are acquired with only saying. In other words, Rav Gidol's chiddush, and that's what the Mishnah is telling us, is even though there's no written shtar, just the fact that they agreed to it, just the fact that they agreed to these tnoyim for the wedding is enough that it's binding on them. Because the idea is, so now you have actually a machlokes, the Ritva, where you're bringing, there's a machlokes between the Rashbam and the Ri on this. According to the Rashbam, this would apply only if right after they made these arrangements, right then after that, the Chosin did Kiddushin. Because then we would say, because of the Chiba, because of the love that he's doing Kiddushin right there on the spot, therefore both sides have agreed to it without opinion, without a shtar, without anything. According to the Ri, it would apply, but according to the Rashbam, if they left at that point and they didn't write anything in it, and later on they did the Kiddushin, then no, those things wouldn't be in effect unless a Kinyan was done or something. According to the Ri, it doesn't matter. Either way, once they agreed to it, then we say the fact that each side appreciates that now we have a Shidduch and then we're becoming Mechotonim and so forth, and that's enough that we're pledging ourselves to this.
Yes, I would say if this has been done before marriage, there's plenty of witnesses by a wedding that we would be
right here. But again, we're talking about when they're doing the shtori psikta, there aren't necessarily, right. I mean, there have to be edim over there, just because practically speaking, otherwise nobody's going to have any proof. But the point is, we don't need to write down these tnoyim. We don't need a kinyan or anything. It's binding. Because heinen advarim aniknin ba'amira, just by saying it verbally, they're mashabim themselves. So therefore, well, that's why you have edim. But the point is, that's our Mishnah is not necessarily talking about where the chosin wrote out a document to this woman saying, I promise to support your daughter for 5 years. We're talking about at the time of the tnoyim is when they spoke it out, right?
There's no paper at all.
There's no paper at all, exactly. So therefore, no proof against Rish Lakish from our Mishnah.
First, Bryce, he brought down, he asked the father what you're giving, and he asked the cow's father what he's giving. So that seems to be part of, that makes sense. That's part of the thing.
Yeah, but the point is, again, according to the Rashbam. But no, not necessarily down. Hein and Adrom and Nikon Ba'am Mira. Just the saying itself is enough to accomplish the Kenyan. You know, nowadays, when we write a Tznoyim, we do write it down, and we do write for Kanina. We do write that we made a Kenyan. But strictly speaking, we're saying over here, that's not necessary. Yeah. Again, I mean, the truth is, I mean, in the olden days, they used to write the Tanoim long before the wedding. You have, for example, let's say with the Rebbe Rashab, where, yeah, the Rebbe Rashab and his Kala, Rebbe Tzenstern Asara, for example, they first arranged the engagement between them when the Rebbe Rashab was 5 and his Kala was 4, or thereabouts, maybe 6 and 5, whatever. They only got married 10 years later. So, because in those times, there was no problem writing the Tanoim long in advance. Closer to our times, because sometimes it happens, unfortunately, a Tanoim is broken. And even though now you don't need a get for it or anything, but it's still a pretty serious thing to break a Tanoim. Therefore, the Minhag developed in many Kreisim, including by us, to write the Tanoim right there by the wedding. But yeah. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Toshma. Okay, let's bring another proof for this Machlokas, you know, Rechen and Shlokish. A Mishnah says in Bechorus, suppose that a father of a bechor writes out a shtar to a koyin saying, I owe you 5 sloyim. Chayev litn lechomish sloyim, so he's chayev to give the 5 sloyim to the koyin. Ubnoi ene podu, but the pidyon aben has not been accomplished because the pidyon aben cannot be accomplished with a shtar.
Cash.
Has to be, well, it doesn't have to be cash, it can be shov kesser, but yeah. So now, on the face of it, why is he chayev b'pashtus? Because he wrote out saying that I'm chayev to you 5 sloyim. And in fact, Tosfos says, the Gemara assumes that in the question that is why the son is not, that's why the pidyon aben is not effective, because in effect, all we have is a separate chayev not related to the pidyon aben. So in other words, if we were to assume that usually when you write out a shtar to somebody, like the Shlokish says, you're not chayev, just because you wrote out a piece of paper saying I owe you money is not enough to be mechayev you, then fine, you would say over here. So over here you would have said he's potter, but the Mishnah is telling us he's chayev, and you would say he's chayev, meaning so it works out according to Rabbi Yochanan. That's the point. It works out according to Rabbi Yochanan. We're saying, in other words, we consider that to be a separate debt. Different than the 5 sloyim for pidyon aben. Well, the fact is he hasn't given 5 sloyim for pidyon aben. Even when he pays this one off, it's going to be kind of like what we learned earlier in the Masechta, sitroi. It's going to be like a side thing that he owes him rather than the actual thing. So when he gives him 5 sloyim, it's not going to be accomplished for pidyon aben. It's going to accomplish that he's paying off this debt that he was meshabel himself.
If sloyim if it's written down and also to do a key would work. For 5 sloyim?
No, because the fact is he's writing out. That's the question. How is Rish Lakish going to understand that this Mishnah? Because according to him, the person should in fact be potter and from any other debt. The only debt he has to the Kohen is the 5 sloyim of pidyon aben. So as soon as he gives him the 5 sloyim, good, the child is the pidyon aben, it's been accomplished. Why is the Mishnah saying not? The answer is shiny hosim the mishubat lemi daraisa. The difference is because there he has a shibur that exists already daraisa.
But he's giving them
in other words, the point is that when he's saying I owe you 5 sloyim, what he's doing is he's reaffirming the shibur that exists daraisa. But he's now making himself a different shibur in effect. So what the Gemara is answering is so the Gemara is answering. The Gemara is answering that we're talking about that he only wrote out the document, he hasn't yet given the 5 sloyim. So therefore, b'no yeni pocket. So he's meshubin midaraisa. So the Gemara asks, "Ihochi amai kosav?" So then, why did he write anything in the first place? He just has to give the 5 sloyim. The answer is kabila vara lekoyin. Okay, he did that in order to confirm one particular koyin. This confirms that he's going to give the pidyon aben to this koyin. Well, the question is, "Ihochi bnoi amai eni podu?" Well, then why, in fact, if the reason is because the shibud exists daraisa? Well then, in that case, then why now that he's confirmed it with a shtar, why in fact is the pidyon aben not work? So Tosfos explains, okay, before he gives him the 5 sloyim, of course there's no pidyon aben been accomplished yet. But once he gives him the 5 sloyim, the Mishnah is saying einoi podu, implying that even after he pays him the 5 sloyim, he's still not going to have accomplished pidyon aben. Why not? And the answer is kid'ula. The reason why that's not going to work is based on what Ula says. The Omer Ula, Dvar Torah Podu L'Chshiyitin, really mina Torah, in this case where the father wrote out a shtar that I owe the Koyin 5 sloyim, really mina Torah, as soon as he gives the 5 sloyim, the pidyon aben would have been accomplished. Umay Taima Omru, no any Podu. So why did the Chachamim say that it's not Podu and he has to give another 5? Gzeira, Shema Yomru Podin B'Shtoris. Because you make a Gzeira, because otherwise people might think that you can accomplish a pidyon aben with a shtar. Now, pidyon haben can be accomplished with kesef or with shava kesef, but it cannot be accomplished. It has to be something where it has to be something which is metaltlin and gufan mamon. It has to be something which is movable, so not karka, not avodim, because we find in the pasuk that there's a hekesh between avodim and karkois, and also not the shtaris, because in gufan mamon, the shtar itself is not money; it only represents money. So now if he were to do pidyon haben with a regular shtar, then that wouldn't work. Like this, people would think mistakenly that if he gives him this shtar and later on he gives him the 5 sloyim, people would think that a shtar is good enough, and therefore the Chachamim said that in this case, even not. But again, that's no proof against Rish Lakish. We would say normally he wouldn't have been chayiv him another 5 at all, because in fact he didn't create a new shibud anyway. All he did was reaffirm the shibud d'oraisa. But now, because of this Zeres Chachamim, we're going to make him give another 5 sloyim.
When he's given the 5 things, said, this is for the pidyon haben, is that good? Or
the fact that he previously gave him a document that says, I owe you 5 sloyim, we're saying no, based on the Zeder de Rabbanon, we're not going to make it work, because he first gave him a shtar. If he had not given him a shtar, if to begin with, he had walked over to the Kohen and said, here's 5 sloyim for my son's pidyon haben, sure, that would work.
So he has to give him 10.
Yes, altogether, he's going to have to give him 10. Okay.
So in other words, the mitzvah de oraisa is assumed to be standing regardless of whether or not there is a shtar, but bringing a shtar adds to the mitzvah de oraisa. This is what we're saying in essence.
Well, in effect, it kind of takes away from the mitzvah de oraisa, really. What it means is we're saying that because he gave a shtar, the result of the gzera is that the 5 sloyim that he gave is considered like something else that he owed the kohen, and he still owes him another 5 for pidyon haben.
So,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So he owes 10 with a shtar.
He ends up giving him 10, right? So the Gemara says, Omar Rabba Ketanoi. So Rabba says, actually, you should know that this machloikas Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish seems to be identical to a machloikas Tanoi. The last Mishnah of Baba Basra says, Orev hayotza achach kitum shtaris. Suppose you have in a shtar, so you have a shtar choy that says Reuven owes Shimon money. After the signatures of the Edim, you have a line that says that Levi has agreed to be an Orev for this choy. So then we say, goyim and achasim b'nei chorin. So now you can't collect from the. So now, if the malveh is going to collect from the orev. Now, normally in halacha, by the way, you're not, in general with a regular orev, you can't collect first from the orev. You have to first go to the loiva. Only if the loiva defaults, then you can go to the orev. The Gemara mentions in some places goyish law was not that way. I have no idea what American law is nowadays about that. But in halacha, unless it's an orev kablon. Then with an Orev Kablon is different, the Gemara talks about in Baba Basra, but the regular Orev, you first have to go to the Loiva. But now, suppose that Reuven defaulted. So now Shimon has to go to Levi to collect. He can only collect from Levi's Nechasim B'nei Chorin, he cannot collect from Levi's Nechasim Shabbat. Because since the fact that he's the Orev was written only after the Edim signed the Shtar, it's written below it, then it's considered like a Milval Peh. Even though it's written into the shtar, because it's after the signatures of the Edim, then there's no coil for it, and therefore it's considered a milval peh. And the Mishnah continues, Maisa v'lifnei Rabbi Shmuel, v'amar govim v'nechasim v'nechorin. Sure enough, such a case came before Rabbi Shmuel, and he said exactly that. He can collect only from the chasim v'nechorin, but not from the Shabbat. Omele Benanas, but on the other hand, Benanas said to Rabbi Shmuel, no, ain't a goyva loymen of chasim nechorin, loymen of chasim mishabodim. As a matter of fact, in this case, you can't collect from the Orev at all, where the Orev is after the signature on the shtar. Omele Loma. So here's where Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities. Remember, we're discussing over here Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. We're saying that he wrote him out a shtar and said, I owe you money. Now, so Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities. Is it like we said before, that Rashi had said, it's a matter of hodah, that he's creating, is it that he's creating a new choiv, or is it he's reaffirming an existing choiv? And that Tosfos discusses, the question could be that, for example, in the original case that we talk about, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, again, it doesn't have to necessarily be like Rashi says, that we're talking about, that he wrote out a shtar without signatures. Rashi says it's a shtar without a signature, and we're talking about that. Rashi is saying that it's a matter of hoydah. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam that even if it's not a matter of hoydah, we can be talking about a full-fledged shtar. with signatures, with the whole nine yards. He never actually owed him anything before that, but now he's creating a new chayv that he never had before. He's voluntarily imposing on himself a new chayv, mishgomer or mishabed nafshe.
Why would a person do that?
Why would we do it? It's a question. But the same thing with the orev over here, Tosfos discusses two possibilities. We can be talking about that the orev only wrote in the shtar, I agree to be an orev for Reuven. Or you can have, so Tosfos discusses actually that the machlokas Rabbi Shmuel and Bananas can actually be on two different cases. One where there's hoidah of an existing thing, and one where there's a new shibud created. So in fact, when Rabbi Shmuel says Lama, when he says why are you Bananas saying you can't collect from the Nechorin or from the Shabbatim, what he's asking is, either way, whether you consider it a Hidah or whether you consider it the creation of a new Chayv, why are you Bananas saying that it's neither one?
At least it should be,
yeah. Omaloi. So Bananas answers, consider the following case. Imagine that Shimon is strangling Reuven in the market. So in other words, Reuven owes him money for a long time. He's defaulting. Shimon is very upset with him. So he grabs him by the coat and he grabs him by his collar, grabs him by the neck in Rosh Hashanah. And now Levi comes by, and Levi says, leave him alone, I'll pay you. Potter. The fact is, Banana says Levi would actually be Potter from paying. Because after all, when Shimon, to begin with, lent Reuven money, he wasn't doing it because he was relying on Levi, because Levi wasn't even in the picture at the time. So therefore, there's no reason that we should consider Levi saying that I'm becoming an Orev, that should obligate Levi in any way. So Banana says the same thing, man, even though it's written in the shtar, since it's after the signatures of the Edim, it means that when Shimon first lent Reuven that money, he wasn't relying on Levi because Levi hadn't yet written anything in the shtar. Therefore, by the same token, Banana says you can't collect anything from Levi.
But here, even when he says that, he's just doing to save his life. He doesn't mean it.
Well, no, we're not saying that Shimon is literally going to kill Reuven. He's just going to make things uncomfortable. Chonikas Chaber doesn't literally mean he's going to strangle the guy to death. It just means, you know, he's grabbing him by the neck and giving him good shaking up or whatever, you know, yeah. But the point is, Banana is saying in both of those cases, in other words, he's saying, Rabbi Shmuel, you would agree in the case of Chonikas Chaver, I know. Well, then in the case where it's written in the Shtar, it's no different. The fact is, there's no Edim on it. The fact is, Achav Chitum Shtar, okay, according to one explanation in Tosfos, according to Rabbi Natan, maybe there are Edim on it, but the fact is, it's not part of the original Shtar. Because otherwise, if it was part of the original shtar, it would have been written before the signatures of Aid. And then we would say that Shimon lent Reuven money only knowing that Levi is available as an order.
If Levi comes, does this mean that if Levi comes with the money or he hands the money, it would be rejected? Is that what we say?
No, not that it would be rejected. Shimon wants to take the money, he's going to hate. But it means that Shimon doesn't have any ability to take Levi to Beis Din and demand him for him to pay the money, according to Ben Nachas. And certainly not to take from the Chosim Shabbatim. Even Rabbi Shmuel said he can't take from the Chosim Shabbatim. Tosfos, by the way, mentions in this Shita of Rabbi Natan, Tosfos points out that the reason why this kind of shibud works when he writes out a shtar is the very fact that he went to all the trouble of writing a shtar and having edim on and so forth shows that he's serious about it, that he's actually accepting a shibud on himself. Again, according to Rashi throughout the whole sugya over here, we're not talking about that he's creating a new shibud. We're talking about that he's reaffirming an existing shibud. According to Rabbeinu Tam, we're talking about that he's actually creating a new shibud with the shtar that he's writing. That's why, again, according to Rashi, it's enough that he writes it in his handwriting, no signature, no nothing, because all he's doing is being moide to an existing debt that he owes. According to Tosfos, that we're talking about is creating a new debt, then there needs to be edim on it. Anyway, so Lema, so now the Gemara says, so now Rabbah says, Lema, Rabbi Yochanan Dama could be Shmuel, but a Shlokish Dama could be Bananas. Does that mean now that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Shmuel? Rabbi Shmuel is saying you could collect from the Orev even though it's after the fact. The same way Rabbi Shmuel would be saying that now in our sugya over here, where the person writes out a document saying that I owe you money, then that's enough to create a shibud on him, even without anything else, even without a signature or pointer dashi, or even though it's creating a new shibud according to Tosfos. Rishlokish don't look at Bananas, and Rishlokish is going like Bananas. Because Bananas is saying that you can't accomplish that with an Orev taking Arevos without there being signatures of witnesses on it, according to Rashi, or by doing a new thing like that after the Shtar was already signed the first time, according to Rabbeinu Tam. So it comes out then, it's the same Machlokas Tanoim. The Gemara answers no. Aliba de benanas kula amale pligi. Within Benanas' opinion, nobody argues, it is true that Rabbi Yochanan's opinion cannot possibly fit with Benanas's. It is true, Rabbi Yochanan would say, I agree that Benanas would say that he's potter. But I'm talking according to Rabbi Shmuel. So, and the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan would say, I don't worry about the fact that Benanas doesn't agree with me. Fine, I have another Tana on my side. I have Rabbi Shmuel on my side.
Therefore,
Rabbi Yochanan is going to go like, so within Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, forget about Benanas' opinion. Benanas' opinion, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, for sure, I don't hold like that. Rish Lakish would say, So Benanas was saying that there's no shibud at all on the order. Right. So Rabbi Yochanan would say, it's true, I don't hold like Benanas. Okay, Benanas is a Tana. I can't argue with a Tana, but I can hold like Rabbi Shmuel, who's also a Tana. So the machlokes would be within Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Rabbi Shmuel, who says that an orev, it's good enough for him to be an orev, even though it's achav chitum shtaris, even though it's after the signature is on the shtar, would Rabbi Shmuel say the same thing in our case, where he writes out a separate piece of paper that says that I owe you money
without
a signature, according to Rashi? So he pleaded a libid Rabbi Shmuel. The machlokes would be within Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Rabbi Yochanan could Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan is going straight out like Rabbi Shmuel. He would say Rabbi Shmuel would make no distinction, the same way as Rabbi Shmuel would say that an Orev can become, that a person can become, that Levi can become an Orev, even though he wrote it only after the signatures of the Edim. The same way Rabbi Yochanan would say that Reuven can write out a piece of paper for Shimon saying, I owe you money, and he owes him money.
Without
Edim, without even Edim.
When the two cases are different, he can say it's the same.
Well, that you would think that Rish Lakish is going to point out there's a distinction. So Rabbi Yochanan would say there's no distinction. One, whatever Rabbi Shmuel says, as far as an Orev, will apply also to our case.
It makes sense.
But Rish Lakish...
There is a distinction. How can you say there's no distinction when there is a distinction?
There is a distinction, but Rabbi Yochanan would say Rabbi Shmuel doesn't hold of that distinction. He would say, I learned Rabbi Shmuel's opinion to be that he would not hold of that distinction. Even though you could logically make a distinction between them, Rabbi Yochanan says, I hold that Rabbi Shmuel does not make any such distinction, and whatever he holds by an Orev, he will also hold by our case where Whereas Rish Lakish will point out there's a distinction. Ad kan like Amr Rish Mal Hasam, Ela B'Shayach Le'ed Shibudah D'Araisa. Because you know why Rish Lakish is saying over there, that you know why Rabbi Yochan is saying over there that an Orev is able to become an Orev even with a weak kind of thing like that? Because the concept of Arevos exists D'Araisa. Rashi on Amun Aleph brings from the Gemara there in Baba Basra that says we find when Yosef's brothers were getting ready to go down to Mitzrayim, and they went, and Yosef had told them the first time around that they can come only if they bring Binyamin, and they're trying to get Yaakov to agree, and you and Reuven had tried and he failed, so now Yehuda is trying, and what does he say to Yaakov? Onoichi e'ervenu, I will be the orev for him. So from there we learn from the Torah the concept of an orev. So now Rish Lakish says, Rabbi Shmuel would say, when it comes to Arevos, the concept of Arevos exists daraisa. Therefore, even if he writes it, achav chitum shtaris, even if he writes down in the shtar, after the Edom already signed it, I'm willing to be an Arev, the fact that there's a strong shibud over here, the fact that such a shibud exists on a daraisa level, is reason enough for us to hold it.
But another big difference is that now, Kate, in our case, there was no witnesses here.
No. Of course there were witnesses over here. Rashi had mentioned Rashi said earlier. He gave a shtar in our presence. We, meaning Edom. No, there was no Edom signed on the shtar. Reuven gave Shimon a piece of paper that says, I owe you $100. He gave it to him in front of Edom. So there's no signature on it, but the Edom were there to see that take place. So Rashi learns that is considered a hodah, that is considered that Reuven, by doing that, is affirming that he owes an existing amount of money to Shimon. In front of witnesses. And therefore, so even that's the point. Even though he didn't say Atam Edai, Rabbi Yochanan says that's good enough. Rish Lakish says that no, that was the point. But now we're talking about that. So now, again, we're talking about a related case of an Orev. So now Rish Lakish will say, it's one thing in the case of an Orev, the fact that Arevos exists on a Daraisa level is reason enough for Rabbi Shmuel to hold him to that. Fine, Benanas is going to say that not. Let's not worry about Benanas right now. Rish Lakish could also say, I hold like Benanas, but he doesn't need to. Given that the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel, he would rather that his opinion fits within Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. So he's going to say, when it comes to an Orev, then Rabbi Shmuel would say that the person is becoming an Orev just based on a weak thing like that. Aval Hocha, but in our case over here, where Reuven gives Shimon a piece of paper, Loi Shayach Shibudar Daraisa, there's no Shibudar Daraisa that's relevant over here. Therefore, he would say, even Rabbi Shmuel would agree with Ben Nanas, that both Rabbi Shmuel and Ben Nanas would agree that in a case like that, then there's no Chiyuv on him. So therefore, so both Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Shlokesh's opinions can fit within Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Okay. The Gemara says, Gufa. Getting back to what we said before, we said, Omer of Gidol Omer Rav, that when it comes to Tnoyim, the father of the Kala asks the father of the Chosin, how much are you giving for your son? And he answers such and such. But how much are you giving for your daughter? Such and such. And then they went and were Makadish. It was Konu. So we said they're Koine. The Kinyan is effective. And those are the kinds of things that are required with only verbal saying. You need Edim, of course, but you don't need a written document. You don't need an actual Kinyan. Just the fact that they said it means the fact that now they're happy that their children are getting married and they're becoming a futanim is reason enough that they're accepting the shibud on themselves. So now the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Mistabra Milsa de Rab Bivite Naira. It would be logical to assume that Rab's statement, saying of Gidol had said this in the name of Rab, it would be logical to understand that Rab's statement is talking about Bivite Naira, specifically when the daughter is a Naira. Because then the father is getting a direct Hana because he gets her money of Kedushin. So therefore, you could say, in return for the fact that he's getting that hana, is why he's willing to be meshabed himself to give X amount for his daughter for not. Avo begeres, but if the daughter is already a begeres, deloy moti hana liyode, where after all, the father is not getting any tangible hana right then, because the kes of kedushin goes to the daughter herself, then maybe you logically you would say that Rav's din would not apply. But Rava continues, v'ha elikim. But I swear in Hashem's name, Omer Rav after the Begeris, that in fact, Rav's din, in fact, was said even about a Begeris. Why? Because Rav says, if you weren't to say that, if you were to say that it only works when he's receiving a tangible benefit, then you have to ask, after all, what is the father of the son? What is the father of the chosin getting? He's for sure not getting any tangible benefit when the kedushin takes place. And yet we're saying that he's accepting on himself that he's going to give such and such towards a nadin or towards household expenses or whatever is valid. It doesn't necessarily have to be much less. I mean, but the point is that the chosin's father is still paying a considerable amount. I mean, you know, even nowadays, for example, you know, they have certain things that traditionally the chosin's father pays for and the kala's father pays for. Anyway. Rav's din applies even if you're not actually receiving any benefit, because after all, the father of the chosin is not actually receiving anything, and yet his chayvos, the fact that he's accepting this chayv on himself, we hold him to it. Therefore, it doesn't make a difference on the girl's side whether she's a naira or a begeris. That the ischaibus is valid. Bahahi hanod to kamichatni hadodi, the fact that they have hanod, that they're marrying into each other's families, that they're becoming mechotonim, gamri umachni lahadodi, with that all alone is why they're deciding definitively that we're going to be machna to one another. The fact that our children are getting married is reason enough. Okay. Now the question becomes, Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi. Can these things, these tnoim that we were just talking about, suppose they do, we said they don't have to write it down. They said it's niknin ba'amira. Suppose they do want to write it down. Is it allowed to write it down or not? Now, why should it not be allowed? Rashi explains, because once you have a shtar written with edim, then conceivably you could collect from the chosim shabadim. Now, maybe we can't do that. It's one thing with a choiv, you're allowed to do that, or other suba or other things like that. Maybe with a tznoyim, it has to be kept verbal. This is how Rashi explained, in order that nobody should think to collect from the shabbatim. Tosfos gives a different explanation.
There's no choiv.
Tosfos gives a different explanation. The question is, do we need both sides to agree in order to write it, or is it enough that one side wants to write it down, and therefore that's reason enough to write it? And then there's another explanation that some of the Rishonim say. The question is, there's no question you could write them down, but if they're written down, do they have the force of a shtar choiv to the extent that you can collect from the chosim shabbat? So there's going to be different explanations of what the Gemara's question is. Is it, are you allowed to write it down with Chalal? Is it, are you allowed to write it down with the consent of only one side or meaning both sides? Or suppose it's written down and has Edim on it, does it have the force of a Shtarcho to collect from the Chasim Shabbatim?
If it has the Edim sign, then
that's the question. That's the question. If we say because if we say that Loy Nitnu Bikasif, it would mean the fact that they put Edim on it doesn't matter. Still, they still couldn't collect from the Chasim Shabbatim. So Amalei Loy Nitnu Bikasif. So Rav Ashi answers they're not given to be written. So again, according to any of these three explanations, according to Rashi, you're not allowed to write it down. The Chachamim did not give you permission to write it. According to Tosfos, if you're going to write it, you need the consent of both sides. And according to the other Rishonim, it means that if you do write it down, it's still you still cannot collect from the Shabbatim. So the Gemara says, Ace,
because there wouldn't be a coal, or the coal wasn't then.
Because apparently, because the coal wouldn't be, or whatever, because it's not something that's meant to be written down. So, so the Gemara says, Ace, so now Ravina asks Ravashi a contradiction. We said in our Mishnah, Pikkin Hoyu Kosvin, we said the smart people would write, Amanasha Ozinus Bitte Chomeshanim Kozman Shatimi. They would write that the 5 years of our Mishnah is in effect only as long as you're with me, only as long as our marriage is still intact. So now we said koisvin. So on the face of it, they are writing. We're talking about it. We said at the beginning of the Gemara that we're talking about shtar psikta. We're talking about a shtar of tnoyim. And we see that the Mishnah is describing writing it. So the answer is no. My koisvin omen. No, the word koisvin in our Mishnah doesn't necessarily mean they write it down. It means they say it verbally. Yeah. Since when do we call speaking verbally? Since when do we call that writing? As a matter of fact, yes. Indeed, we learned a Mishnah, in our Masechta. We had previously in our Masechta where a husband writes out to his wife that I have no dinu dvorim in your property, and we talk about what does that mean? It means what does he take away himself from? Is he saying that he doesn't get paid us? Is he saying that we talked about what we said there were different? We had several different possibilities. What exactly he wrote out? First case was the beginning of the ninth parak. We said if he said dinu dvorim emim and chasayich, he still gets to eat payrus. And he still gets the yarushin, just that if she sells the property, then the sale will be valid and he can't protest that. And then we talk about if he says, dinu dvorim ein machasayich v'peiros seyan, and machayich v'moseich, and different permutations like that. Yeah. So the point is that even though it's said over there, hakoisiv, v'toni rapiyah ha'omelishta, nevertheless, from Chia teaches in a braisa that the same din works also if he says verbally to his wife. So we see that sometimes the word akosiv doesn't necessarily mean writing it out. It can mean something that conceivably could be written down, but the lamaisa, it's usually done about that. Yeah, of course, there have to be witnesses, because if there's no witnesses, then you don't have any proof. The truth is, actually, there is a Gemara. You have to remember, we actually had this in one of our Sunday Lakota Sichas classes a while back. We had there's a difference between Ede Kiyum and Ede Birur. Most Edim, most of the time when we talk about Edim, they're usually Ede Birur. You need them to confirm what happened, but even if you don't have Edim, if both sides agree what happened, then we're good anyway. We don't necessarily need the Edim. The Gemara's expression on it in some places is Loy Ivri Sadi El Lashkorim. Witnesses are needed only for liars. Only if one person is going to lie or otherwise deny, then yeah. On the other hand, then you have what are called Ede Kiyum, where without them, the thing doesn't happen. Kiddushin, for example. If there's no Edim by Kiddushin or by Get or by various other things, then nothing. The Kiddushin or the Get is invalid.
Bangla didn't happen.
Right. So because you need Edim. Okay, in the case of a get, you need Edim signed on it. If you have only Edim signed, Edim Chasima Kauti, Edim Sida Kauti, we talked on that earlier, and almost after the Macholikas or Meir and the laws are on that. The point is, in other words, here we're talking the pastors, here we're talking about Edim Birr. If both sides agree that he agreed to support her for 5 years, then yeah, we don't need Edim for that. The question is, what if an argument comes up about it? Then you need the Edim in order to confirm that this is in fact what he agreed.
Well, as long as we leave it together.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
so the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof. A Mishnah says in Bava Basra, Ein Kosvin Shtore Edrasin Vinisurin Elamidas Shneim. The Mishnah describes over there what kind of shtoris you can write unilaterally with only one side versus what kind of shtoris do you need both sides' consent in order to write. And the Mishnah says you can only write Shtore Edrasin Vinisurin only with the consent of both sides. So, Hal Midas Shneim Kosvin. Now the implication is if both of them agree, they can write it. My love shtore psikta. L'chura, when we say shtore erusin, we mean a shtar of tnoim. What we've been talking about throughout the sugya, where we say, how much are you giving and how much are you giving? And they write it down.
We see that
you write it. Because the Mishnah is saying you don't write it except for the consent of both of them, implying if they both consent, then you can write. The answer is loy, shtore erusin mamish. No, actually, the mission over there means literally a shtar erusin. We know you can do erusin, you can do kedushin with kesef shtar or bia. So if you're going to do kedushin with a shtar, that shtar has to be written with the kala's das, has to be written with the woman's das. Kedira papa, and that is because kedira papa of Rav Shlevi, as in fact we see that a papa and Rav Shlevi say di itbar kosver the shema v'shal kosver the shema v'shal emidaita. What if he wrote a shtar kedushin, a shtar that says in it harayat mekudeshesti? He wrote it l'shma, having her in mind, but he didn't write it with her das. She didn't agree to him writing it ahead of time. Rabba v'rabina v'rabina amri mekudeshes. Rabba and Rabina say it doesn't matter. The kedushin is still valid because it has to be written l'shma. Fine, because to that extent it's like a get. No, so that's the thing. You have to have her consent to give it to her. But they say, in order to write it, you need it l'shma, similar to a get. But they say, think of it. Where do we learn b'chlal that you can do kedushin with a shtar? Because v'yotze v'hoisa, since the pasuk tells us, no, kicha kicham is there for his money, his kesef. How do we know that you can do kaddish with a shtar? So the Gemara explains in kedushin, since you can divorce with a shtar, and we have a hekesh v'yotze v'hoisa, then therefore we learn also that you can do kaddish with a shtar.
You know what's a shavu
prota? It doesn't matter whether it's a shavu prota. Doesn't matter. Shtar by itself is a valid method. Bia is also a valid method of kedushin, even though there's no shavu prota involved yet. There's three different methods.
Why don't we just say that das, that she gives das by abstaining to give approval? Why don't we just say that? Because you seem to be saying
that.
Well,
so that's the part. In other words, according, so that's the thing we're talking about. In other words, so that's the question. The fact that she's receiving it midaito, very nice, but did it have to be written with her das to begin with? So Rabba and Ravina are saying no, because they're saying we're drawing an analogy to a get. Now a get, the woman has to receive it with her das in the sense that she has to know that she's receiving a get, but she doesn't have to agree to receive it. It can be, the get can be written without her consent and given to her without her consent. Only Cherem Ben Goshen prevents that. But so by the same token, Rabba and Ravina say, if we're learning a shtar kedushin from a shtar of get, then by the same token, it can be written without her das. When it's given to her, sure, it has to be that she agrees to accept it. But Rav Papa, Rav Shlevi, Amri Eina Mekudeshes. On the other hand, Rav Papa and Rav Shlevi say she's not Mekudesh, because they say the same way as with Kedushe Kesef, you need her das for the entire thing. The same way over here, even to write the shtar, you need her das. Not only to hand it to her, but even to write it, you need her consent. So therefore, so that Mishnah, when it says shtore erusin, so one way we could understand that it means shtore erusin would be, again, a shtar psikta, a tnoim, but then we would have the question that didn't Rav Ashi just say that loy nitnu likosev, those on a shtar tnoim is not meant to be written. So now we're saying no, that we're going to understand the Mishnah, the way Rav Papa and Rav Shlevi would, that we're talking about an actual shtar kedushin. You can write it only with the consent of both of them, not because it's like a regular shtar where you need both sides to agree, but because each side is made a chai of one another or something. But because that's the way a shtar kedushin works. If you don't have the das, then it's not considered a shtar kedushin. The same way as, for example, if a get were to be written without the husband's das, then it wouldn't be a valid get.
Well,
that's according to Rashi. You're not allowed to write it. That's the thing. Rashi explained the question was that it meant that you're not allowed to write it down. The Chachamim did not give you permission to write it down in order that people shouldn't mistakenly think that they can collect from the Chosim or Shabbatim. Again, Tosfos had said the question is whether they both have to agree. And
right.
We're talking about when they first went. Okay. So the Gemara says Toshma, let's bring another.
Love is not that way, can we do that?
Well, because again, because you have the opinion of Tosfos and you have the opinion of the other Rishonim that say that the question was not so much can you write it, but do you need both sides' consent to write it? Fine, when you write it to Noim nowadays, you have both sides' consent. And according to the third explanation, it's can you collect from the Chos and the Shabbatim? Fine, the question is not whether you can write it down to begin with. Of course you can write it down, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says
why the Chachamim say that writing the shtar is forbidden because they didn't want people to confuse. Is that more important than having a proof that
proof you don't have Adim, and I guess also the point is, especially we talked about before, according to the Rashbam, we said that according to the Rashbam anyway, this whole thing that Hainin Advoim on Nikim Bamira would only be if right after that you have the Kiddushin. So practically speaking, there's not going to be that long before both sides have to fulfill their obligations anyway. So maybe then, according to Rashi, there's no, but even according to the Ri that we're talking about, if they were Makadosh later, practically speaking, the Tznoim is really a short-term thing. Sooner or later, you're going to have the wedding, and then each side is going to fulfill their side for the Tznoim. They're going to give their Nadin, they're going to give their whatever. So their expenses towards the wedding, whatever. So therefore, maybe according to Rashi, then the Chachamim weren't concerned that you may not have enough of a raya. You'll have Eidim, especially, like we said before, especially if it takes place at the time of the Kiddushin, you often have many people around anyway, so you'll have enough evidence. Okay.
The Gemara says, so obvious.
What?
That's not so obvious. Even if it's short time, it doesn't mean that the obligations are going to move.
Maybe that's one reason why Rashi disagreed. Maybe that's one reason why Tosfos and the other Rishonim disagree with Rashi on the meaning of it. Onward. The Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof as far as this question of whether you're allowed to write, of whether what the din is as far as Tznoim, as far as writing them. Our Mishnah had said, Mesu. We said that if the, again, going back to this case, this woman who had been married multiple times, and with each one, with her second and her third husband, she said, I want you to support my daughter for 5 years. So we said, Mesu. We say, if Shimon and Levi die, B'nei Se'en Nizonis B'nechos B'nei Chorin, their own daughters are supported only out of B'nei Chorin, because that's Tznoi Ksuva. V'hi Nizonis B'nechos B'nechos B'shabadim. This daughter, the stepdaughter of theirs, is supported even from Nechos B'shabadim, B'pnei Shehi K'balas Choyib, because she's considered like a Balas Choyib. Now, by definition of Bal Choyib, in order to collect from the Shabbat, it has to have a shtar. So obviously there's a shtar written. So what are you talking about then that we're saying that you can't write the shtar? The Gemara answers, the answer is that the Mishnah is talking about where they actually made a kinyan. So they actually made a kinyan. In fact, Tosfos says, the Gemara could have just as well answered, let's say they did write it down. But that's where Tosfos says that no, the question was never whether you can write it down or not. The question was whether you can, the question is whether the kinyan is valid without writing. So does it dafka have to be written down or not? So the Gemara asks, Hachi bonus nami. So in that case, why don't you say the same thing with the daughters as well? So if they made a kinyan, then the daughters also can collect from the chasim shabadim. The answer is, the case is, the Mishnah is talking about, they made a kinyan regarding the stepdaughter, but he didn't make a kinyan regarding any future daughters that he and his wife would have together. So the Gemara says, "My psaka, what kind of definitive statement is that? How could the Mishnah be assuming as such a blanket thing that you're usually going to have a kinyan for the stepdaughter and not for his own natural daughter?
Because you all have felt you want to do it naturally, but for a stepdaughter, you don't want to do it.
Yeah, but the question is, why wouldn't a man want to look out for his daughters as well? So how can the Mishnah be saying as a given that it's an obvious thing that you're going to make a kinyan regarding the stepdaughter, but not for his own daughters, such that his own daughters can collect only from Nechasim Nechard? If he's already going to the trouble of making a kinyan, why doesn't he also make a kinyan with his wife that says, any daughters that I have with you, I'll also, that we're making a kinyan, and then we'll be able to support them from Nechasim Shabbat. Why would he not do that? Sons are going to inherit eventually. The answer is, because the difference is the stepdaughter was already there. She was already alive at the time of the kinyan. Therefore, Mahani lo kinyan. Therefore, kinyan is effective. Bonus to like have a b'shas kinyan. Daughters, they haven't been born yet. These are future daughters that are going to be having. They didn't yet exist. Loi mahani lo kinyan. So a kinyan wouldn't be effective for them. Now, it's even, you can talk about whether you can be machmed dover shalei bol olam. But here we're talking about to be machmed to somebody who is not bol olam. That you can't do. To be machmed to somebody who doesn't even exist yet. You can't be machna. Even in Bava Basra, you have a case where it talks about, for example, a man can be machna to his unborn child because he has a certain chiba toward that child, even though the baby is still in the womb. But here, where the babies haven't even been conceived yet, then no kinyan is going to be valid.
Who says
they may not even end up having daughters, right? So therefore, so we can assume that if he makes a kinyan, he's only going to make for daughters that actually are living at the time. But the Gemara asks, Mila Askin, Dahaboy Bashas Kinyan. Why? You could actually say that you could actually just as well have a case, Dahavori Bashas Kinyan. You can have a case where daughters that he has with her live at the time when he's marrying her. Suppose that he divorced her and now is remarrying her. And now when he's remarrying her, she's saying, on condition that you support our daughters for 5 years. So that'll include my stepdaughter, yeah, that'll include your stepdaughter that I had from the previous marriage, as well as our daughters that we had from the first time around. So you could have a case where daughters are alive, and yet the Mishnah is saying as a blanket statement that the daughters from this marriage get only from the Chasim Nechorin, and the stepdaughter gets from the Chasim Shabbatim.
He's going to get Shabbatim from them, from when the king started.
No, but the point is, now he's remarrying. So now he's remarrying her. Why shouldn't we assume that when he's making a kinyan, he's making it to cover all the daughters that they have, both the daughters that they had together, as well as the daughter that the same way he's making a kinyan for the stepdaughter, the same way he should be making a kinyan for his natural daughters.
And the coil will be out there from now on.
Yeah. Well, when he makes a kinyan, then he makes a coil, yeah. The answer is no. Ella, rather, we're going to do a different answer. It doesn't matter whether the daughters are actually existing or not. Ihi delesa the Tanai Beistin, because the stepdaughter, there's no Tanai Beistin on her, because obviously she's not his daughter. So therefore, the whole Tanai Beistin of Tanoi Ksuba, that the daughters that you and I have together are going to be supported out of my Nechasim, that doesn't apply to her. Therefore, Mahani lo Kinyan. Therefore, Kinyan is effective for her. Bonus the Isnu of Tanai Beistin, whereas the daughters are covered by a Tanai Beistin, loy Mahani lo Kinyan. And a Kinyan is not effective for them. And ask why? Migra Gari? What? Because they're covered by a Tanai Beistin, therefore they should be worse off. What's the logic? Ella, no. No, some Hainu Taima. Rather, the reason is because with the daughters, yes, it does depend on the Tanai Beistin, but the reason is, given the Isnu of Tanai Beistin, since the daughters are covered by a Tanai Beistin, Emot Srori Apasinu, it could very well be, we might well say, that he had arranged, that he had given them bundles of money before he died to arrange for their mezonos. Therefore, that's why we can. That's why we should say that they should not collect from Nechasim Mishabadim, because it's very possible that they, being his own daughters, he arranged for them ahead of time and gave them tzorah, as opposed to his stepdaughter. He's not going to do that necessarily, and therefore, we would say that there was going to be a separate kinyan for her, and we don't assume that he gave her tzorah.
Because maybe there'll be a bundle of money.
Because it's very likely this being his own daughter, that he's going to want to have arranged for them by giving them bundles of money.
This way you don't have to worry about
your son taking care of them, etc. Okay. Yeah. We said in the Mishnah also, Lo Yom HaRishon, we said that the first husband, rather in this case, we're really talking the second husband, the first one with whom the condition was made, Shimon, cannot say once she marries Levi that I'm sorry, I agreed to it only when we're married, unless they wrote out like a pictim did, he said, then he's still responsible. So, and we said in the Mishnah that he has to bring the food to where the mother is. So, Amar Rav Chisda, Zoy Semeres, we learn from this, Bas Eitzel Ima, that we learn from this, that a daughter belongs with her mother. In fact, the Mishnah.
Especially here, because it's not his daughter.
Well, that's right. But in other words, the point is that she's... The point is, it actually says, we don't say to her brother's house. We don't say that he has to bring the food. We don't say that we expect that this daughter is going to live with her brothers. Rather, the expectation is that he's going to live with her mother, that she's going to live with her mother. Yeah. Now, the point of that is, it actually explains, the next Mishnah, which we're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, is going to tell us that when it comes to the Almana, usually, when it comes to the Almana herself, usually, many times, the Yorshim can tell her, we're going to give you mezonos only if you live with us. Because you have the expression in English, two can live as cheaply as one. Or the Gemara is going to call it birkas habayis. You often have, for example, we often see when you have, let's say, for example, expenses of food for one person, then you have expenses for two people. It's not twice as much. It's less than twice as much. Because there's savings.
You have to buy onions.
Yeah, let's say, for example, you buy a vegetable and you can't use the whole thing for one person. You buy in bulk and you get discounts, etc. So yeah, so it comes out that more people living together, you have a certain savings in it. So therefore, the next Mishnah is going to describe that if the Almana doesn't want to live together with the Yoshim, then they have the right to tell her, we're not giving you the full amount of mezonos. We're giving you whatever we would have had to spend on your mezonos if you were living with us. And then the Mishnah is going to describe in the next Mishnah, there can be cases where that's not. If she's young and they're also young and there's going to be problems over there, then she has... Anyway, the point is, Rashi is saying over here, we don't say that. The brothers can't say, you know what? Yes, we're required to support her because of Tanoi Ksuba out of the Yerusha, but only if she's living with us. No, she lives with her mother. And the idea is because her mother will be Mechanech. Yeah. And also for the reason that the Gemara is going to give another reason as well in just a minute. So the daughter belongs with the mother. The Gemara says, why? Who says that our Mishnah is talking about an older daughter and the Chiddush is that even then she still lives with her mother? Maybe we're only talking about a Ketana. And the reason why we don't want her to live with her brothers, instead we want her to live with her mother, is because of a case that happened What was the case? The Tanya. In other words, the point is we have to consider. We have to always consider the possibility. People, unfortunately, will do crazy things for money. In this case, the brothers are required to support her. They may think to themselves, you know what? Let's kill her. Then we don't have to. Then we don't have to worry about supporting her anymore.
These are real brothers. Or
yeah, let's say even her real brothers. Unfortunately, you have people will do people.
At least your money.
So now if she's a gdola, then fine, she can protect herself. But if she's a ktana, she can't. So therefore, maybe dafka by a ktana, we say she should live with her mother. Who says that our Mishnah is talking about a gdola and the chiddush is even that she gets to live with her mother? Which, by the way, you have a machlokas rishonim about that. The Rosh brings a machlokas rishonim. Is this talking about dafka when she's widowed or also when she's divorced? Maybe when the mother is divorced, maybe the father has the right to say, I want custody of my daughter, after a certain age, at least. On the other hand, if she's widowed, okay, there's no husband to take care of her anyway. And for the reason the Gemara is going to say over here, maybe it's not safe for her to live with her brothers. But some Rishonim learn that way. And other Rishonim learn that it doesn't matter, widowed or divorced, either way, the mother has custody. We talked about actually earlier in the sector, what if the mother herself doesn't want custody, then we have, in some cases, the father can be required to, in some cases, if the girl is old enough, then we can require her to just live off tzedakah, basically, that he'll give her over to the kohol, and the kohol will take care of her, whatever. Anyway, so the Gemara says, D'tanya, we learn in a braisa, Misha mesvi niach ben kotam le'imai, suppose a person dies and he leaves over a young son, the Yoshim of the father say, let the son live with us and when we'll raise him. The Imay Amerisi hey bini godolatsli, and his mother says, let my son be raised with me. Manichano say it's Imay, the Ain Manichano say it's a royal Yosha. We leave him with his mother, we do not leave him, right? And we're not talking about a child below 6, where then pretty much he has to stay with his mother anyway. We're talking above 6 years old. In theory, he could live with the other relative, but nevertheless, we still have him live with his mother, somebody who's not going to Yashin. Because in fact, Maisa Hoyu Vishachtuhu Ayin Reish He. It happened once with such a case that they shechted him. Now, what is Ayin Reish He? So actually, So on the face of it, Erev Rosh Hashanah, but why would that be relevant? So older prints of the Gemara expanded it to Erev HaPesach. But the question is why Dafka Erev Pesach? So in fact, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says the point of it was, even though we're talking about this story may have happened when the Beis Hamikdash was still standing, these people should have thought to themselves, you know what, if we do that, we're going to be Tomei, we can't bring the Korban Pesach. Nevertheless, they didn't care about that, and they still killed them anyway. On the other hand, there's a note over here in Masoreis HaShas that says that really it's supposed to be Erev HaRishon, the very first evening that he was by them, then they already killed him. On the other hand, it seems that maybe that note was added by the censors. They were out of fear of the censors. They were afraid if they mentioned Shechtin, somebody Erev Pesach, the censors are going to use it. They're going to use it as an excuse for a blood libel. Yeah. Whatever the case, the point is, the Braisa is saying that, it actually happened in a case like that, where a boy was living with his father's Yoshim and they killed him, figuring that this way they don't have to divide the Yerusha with him, or they don't have to support him or whatever. So by the same token, maybe with the girl, the same thing. But you were saying that as long as the brothers have to support her, they may have, unfortunately, an incentive to get rid of her. So how do you know that our Mishnah is talking about even an older girl who could protect herself, still gets to live with her mother, still the mother has custody? The answer is in Cain, if that's all it meant, listening the Mokum Shehi, then all it would say is you bring the food wherever the daughter is, implying, so for a younger daughter, she's with her mother, and with an older daughter, wherever she's living. My Lamokum Sheima, why does the Mishnah use the expression the place of her mother, implying that always the daughter is with the mother? Shamina Bas Eitzalaim, so it means the daughter is always with the mother. Loishna Dolav, Loishna Tana, doesn't matter whether the daughter is young or whether she's old, either way, she needs her mother to be Machanech her and so forth, and therefore she stays with her mother. Shkayach, everyone.